Welcome to episode 17 from Digital Outbox. Hello, good afternoon, and welcome again to another episode. I'm Shaquille, and joining me is Ian.
Hello.
Hello, and Chris.
Hi there.
How are you feeling today, Chris?
I'm feeling a lot better today, a lot more with it, sprightly, on top of things, you know. All those nice things.
Ian, everything all right?
Fantastic.
Yeah, sounds it.
No, feeling good. It's been a busy week, and I've now got a week off work, so it's all good.
Sounds good.
Okay, let's crack on then. First article we have is Digital Britain Report by Ian Dick.
Well, it's not my Digital Britain Report.
Ian wrote it, yeah.
Our roving
so it's your fault, Ian.
It's all my fault. And this is following up on, I think it must have been about 6-8 weeks ago that Digital Britain came out. And it's now just confirming that there will be this £50 tax on landlines. So every month, anybody with a landline in the UK will be paying 50p tax.
How do you feel about that?
I'm not really fussed.
My take on it, I think it's quite a good idea. It's a way of taking money. I can see the counter argument against it being, you know, if I'm a granny who's never used broadband in her life, never going to, why should I pay my 50p to actually do it?
I think it, what I would have liked if they just said current internet users. So if they'd, you know, if it was all cable and broadband or landline users that have got broadband now, we'll pay a 50p tax, then fine.
So anyone with a broadband account, whack a 50p onto that. And I'm sure actually companies would then start absorbing that cost and, you know, passing it on. Or not even passing on. The competition would drive that cost into the cost of the service. So maybe that's a better way of thinking about it.
So what about yourself, Shaki? What do you think?
To be honest with you, I don't mind. But I was just thinking maybe for the benefit of people who missed our previous report on this, can we quickly summarise why we'll be taxed?
So Digital Britain Report was all about trying to take, I guess it's the next 5 to 10 years of internet access, the actual broadband infrastructure, and also things like piracy and how we access digital content. So the proposal is a 50p tax per month, so £6 a year, and that money will go to fund investment in the broadband infrastructure. So other companies can then ask to get access to this fund. And I guess it's mostly targeting outlying areas or harder to reach areas. Yeah. I don't think they're really targeting, you know, city centres or places where there's a good population already.
Some of the money is going to go into building fibre infrastructure to push that nearer to people. Whether that's city centre to start with, I don't know, but I know some of it's been put aside for that.
And initially, I think BT came out and said they thought it was a fairly good idea and it was something they could take advantage of. Some other companies weren't so sure, and then I think later on BT kind of went back on that and said it's not enough, they needed more.
They wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Dogs.
And to be honest, I've not really seen much company reaction since. Some people thought it was just a proposal and it would probably be after the next general election before anything took place, but this week they've confirmed it'll be in a bill before Christmas to try and get it through.
I think it's one of the things. I think we have to build a network. We need to find the money from somewhere. This is one way of doing it. 50p per month. So it doesn't seem too bad.
I mean, obviously people like us, we don't mind paying that if it means an improvement in services. You could say some people will find something to whinge about, but end of the day, 50p a month is not really a lot, is it?
It's not a lot, I guess. The only issue is it enough? You know, is it going to be enough to actually take, you know, UK forward? Is it going to need actual more funding?
Yeah, true. Maybe it's just it's just like a little boost, you know, just to keep get some of the companies to, you know, move ahead.
Yeah.
Because I know BT were like planning on doing something anyway, and maybe this will make the plans go a bit faster because they've got some extra money coming
in. Well, BT's 21st Century Network starting to roll out heavily from, I guess, the next quarter. Certainly all the exchanges in my area are just getting upgraded. Just over the last couple of weeks, we've had loads of BT vans replacing all the cabinets.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just either before Christmas or after Christmas. I should have access to it.
You're in a pretty good area though, aren't you?
Yeah, so. It seems to be, you know, in a fairly big exchange in Glasgow. And I think because you're, you know, big kind of city centre population, you tend to get, you know, the unbundled connections. Or I remember with BT when they're rolling out faster broadband previously, like ADSL2, yep. they were one of the first exchanges as well. So
excellent.
Lucky.
Yep. So sticking with the internet and all that, let's move on to Music at War. Which Chris can tell us about.
Yeah, so I think maybe a couple of weeks ago there were some pretty notable bands and band members coming out and saying, what's the point in all this effort to fight against illegal downloading and file sharing? I mean, bands like Radiohead, Pink Floyd drummer, Nick Mason, and
that was for the when the government suggested them throttling people's connections, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And so this week we've seen another group of bands and singers and come out and pretty much say, no, hang on a sec, we should do everything we can to stop the file downloaders. And so this charge being led by Lily Allen, she's sort of on her high horse basically saying, you know, that we should be doing everything we can, sort of, you know, stating things like, you know, the album sales have halved in the last 10 years. And about 95% was illegally downloaded music. I think that's one of the things she said in 2008. Yeah, 95% of all music downloaded was illegally done so. So it was just an interesting story, really. And they're basically, Lily's now slagging off all these rich bands. She's saying, you know, they've all got the money, they've made their money, so they don't have to worry about it anymore. And little people like us, we don't make any money anymore.
I think what was quite interesting was, so Lily Allen seems, she started up a blog and started putting a couple of posts up, and she was getting slagged to hell. Because I guess it's not a popular stance to say, you know, I want people thrown off the internet, you know, I want more money. And there was another group, I think it was Featured, Featured Artists Coalition, I think was the name of the group. And it seemed to be they were against what Lily Allen was saying.
That's guys from Radiohead and Pink Floyd.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of them in there. But they had a meeting, and it was either Tuesday night or Wednesday night, and Lily Allen turned up. And what they actually came out and agreed to do was follow what Lily Allen was said. So they put out a statement, we undersigned wish to express our support for Lily Allen and her campaign to alert music lovers to the threat that illegal downloading presents to our industry and to condemn the vitriol that has been directed at her in recent days. And what they've agreed to do is support a 3-strike sanction. So you get like 3 warnings, and then the final sanction isn't thrown off the internet, but it's a restriction on your bandwidth. You know, so you can still get email and bits and that, but you would be, you know, I guess what they're looking for is you wouldn't have access to BitTorrent or news groups or any other way, and it would be so slow it would be impractical. And I guess it's all going to come to a head. I think they're trying to get a meeting with Mandelson over the next couple of weeks, and I think it's the next couple of weeks that they're going to try and set out in concrete what they actually want to do.
I think we're seeing things that are coming along that are solving the problem in a much clever, you know, more clever way. But I still, there's so much inside the box thinking, you know, that no one's actually trying to think, how can we solve this problem in a clever and forward thinking ways? They're keeping all these massive industries and sectors that aren't needed anymore. You don't need a massive distribution network when all you need is a place on a server somewhere. And actually bands should start thinking about, how can I get direct to my customers and get the extra money for doing that? But how do I do that?
A lot of the other artists, when you keep on hearing this, or we need to come up with, you know, there's more new and unique ways that we can fund ourselves. And it's like, there's not many people trying to do it, but.
No. They're totally in the mentality, oh, I need to get signed, and then they can deal with all that, and I just have to sing along and do my little pop thing.
If they accepted that there's a, and I guess it's a younger generation, not as old fogies, but probably including us, and music is free, and if you start off with that, you know, assumption, then how do you make money?
I mean, I think they should think of themselves, you know, they're in business, then they're not just artists. They've got to think about themselves as a business. And businesses are having to adapt to the internet and all the things it means. And, you know, they have to do that to survive. So I don't think singers should be any different. And I should think they should fly free. They should escape the shackles of being, you know, tied into labels and stuff. Arctic Monkeys have managed it. Radiohead have proved that you don't have to sell your album. You can actually give it away and still make money.
Yeah.
And I know Radiohead are a bit of an exception. You know, they're a big band that it's got all their support in place already. Yep. But, you know, there's been plenty of places where people have released their music online and become successful from it.
I mean, I think the first group of artists that came out and said, no, we don't want to alienate our listeners, I think they're onto something because, I mean, with the stance that they have now, they could turn a lot of fans against themselves. So,
especially,
I mean,
in an environment where people are losing their jobs and they're having to take pay cuts,
exactly.
And all that.
You know, and I mean, the negative effect that will have is that they're going to lose the sales anyway. So, you know, it's like they should be focusing maybe on trying to find a better business model to
And I can understand a lot of the famous names are getting behind it because what they're saying is it's all about up and coming artists. You know, so it's not the Radioheads are worried about themselves. It's about the next Radioheads coming along and how do they get established and how do they make a career.
Yeah.
But I think there's a place there that they can do that, and they can,
yeah, you know, definitely.
Unheard of bands can come through now.
But I don't think it helps when you've got somebody like Lily Allen who kind of pretended, you know, I'm from the streets and all that kind of nonsense, and it's like far from it.
Mm.
It's just a posh little girl just playing games.
She is so bitter.
She should just stick to exposing herself like she normally does and just carry on doing that, I think.
you'd be quite happy, would you, if she just carried on doing that?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Just keep her mouth shut and carry on doing that.
Well, to be honest, the best thing she said all week was when she said she's given up music. And it was like, wait.
So, moving on. Chris is going to tell us about BBC and possible charges on iPlayer.
Well, BBC are very much not wanting to charge and will no plans to charge for iPlayer content. So watch again and, you know things. But there's plenty of pressure coming from the industry because the rest of the industry would like to be able to charge for their content, but they don't think they can do while the BBC still don't charge. So Lorraine Higgersy, she's a chief executive of Talkback Thames, a content producer, said that micropayments for content should be something that people are looking at, but it's not going to happen because BBC are there saying they're not going to pay have those payments.
I mean, the content on BBC's website and iPlayer isn't that already paid for by a license fees?
That's what BBC say. Look, this is covered by the license fee, and therefore we can't charge people again to watch it.
Mm.
But it's the same argument that Son of Satan, Murdoch, was having 3-4 weeks ago when he trots out his son and starts prattling on about BBC's free and that's an issue for us, and they shouldn't be able to do what they're doing with license fee money. And I think you'll see more and more arguments about what BBC does with public money, and they want to pigeonhole them into doing the things obviously they're wanting to do but charge for.
I think most of the playback services, so whether it's 4OD or BBC, the quality is not as such that it's not brilliant quality.
No.
And therefore, if you ever do want to keep something, you're still likely to go for a high quality download or buy a DVD. So I think it sits quite nicely, and why would I want to pay that for it?
Exactly. I mean, on the PS3 now, you look at the quality of it, it's fine. It's not the same as broadcast, but it's fine. It's watchable.
Yeah, but it's definitely watchable. But no, I don't know. Maybe, you know, the business model is saying we can't keep supporting all this without payments. But if you put payments on there, we'll soon find out what we actually do want to watch again. What we don't.
Mm.
Okay, nice one. Next article we have seems quite exciting. It's about a plugin for Internet Explorer that replaces a rendering engine.
Yeah, Ian? There's been a bit of a campaign in the last few months. Some notable websites trying to get behind or trying to put a bit of pressure on Microsoft to remove IE6, to actually try and encourage people to move on from IE6. And I'll be honest, it really, for me, it's an absolute pain in the tits because IE6 is the default browser at work.
As it is at so many places.
Exactly, and that's the problem. And upgrading is always an issue, especially when you're talking about, I guess 100,000 different, PCs across countries, etc.
That's just lazy IT people.
Anyway, shut your hole. So Google... one of the issues they've got is you've got Google Wave coming out. So there should be some preview, some invites going out over the coming week, which hopefully we will get one of. Please. And one of the things they've decided to do is not support IE6 or 7. I don't even know. I might even be IE8. And what they've come out with is a plugin that takes advantage of the APIs that Microsoft have fully disclosed, and the plugin replaces the internal rendering engine with Chrome's WebKit engine. So it means that anything written for Chrome will now work in IE6 as well. Obviously, some people were pretty stunned, I guess, when this came out, and thought it was a pretty smart move on Google's part, and also, you know, a bit of kick in the teeth for Microsoft. Microsoft, a couple of days later, reacted pretty angrily about the whole thing, saying there's no need to do anything. What should be happening is if people are hacked off IE6, they should be moving to IE8, which is a far more standard compliant, more secure, more stable browser, which is all true.
Yep.
But they also then started doing, I guess, kind of IT gobbledygook around about this is running as a plugin, and it just means there's two different areas where people can pick up, you know, malware and malicious scripts. And it's just bollocks, absolute bollocks.
I can see why they're a little bit upset by it, but the fact, you know, that doesn't, their stance on it doesn't reflect the reality, which is too many people are still using version 6,
yeah.
And the more we get rid of it, the better.
But at the same time as I'm saying, oh, it's running as a plugin, it's doubled it, so I'll remove Silverlight then. I'll take that off all my browsers then. Thanks very much, Microsoft, because obviously you're highlighting that plugins are dangerous.
Yeah. Wolf in sheep's clothing.
So I don't know how much of this from Google is a serious attempt to do anything, or whether it was just a headline grab. I can't see many people installing it, to be honest.
Yeah, so, you know, if there's
it's a bit of PR, and I think it's just a poke in the eye of one of the competitors to say, look how far behind you are. We can actually make your systems better than you can.
I think most people are just surprised you could even do it.
Yeah,
you know, actually rip out the whole of the rendering side of the browser and literally just leave the shell that you can then plug into.
And from what I understand from reading quite a few blog posts on it, there's very little Microsoft can do because it's an open API that they've been documented and has been there for years. So it's just another company taking advantage of the APIs produced by Microsoft.
I mean, I don't see Microsoft even trying to do anything, because like you said, if you can replace that with the Chrome engine, then why not just use Chrome to start with, you know?
Exactly. Know I mean? And I can't
because
see many
lazy IT people won't put it on your system.
Yeah, but they're not going to put this on either. You're not going to have the, you know,
exactly.
If you're in an enterprise, you know, environment, the chances are if you've got IE6, you're not going to be able to replace it with anything else either. That's why I'm saying I just think this is a poke in the eye more than anything, a serious attempt to do anything.
It's a way of making sure that IE6 users have a way of getting access to these services if they want it, and it's easier than trying to persuade lots of companies to upgrade to either Google Chrome or whatever.
Get a grip.
Thing is, you know, like if IE6 users want that, then surely they want to move on and might as well get IE7 or 8 instead.
Well, you'd put IE8 on, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Even just for the extra features on it, but I mean,
well, to be honest with you, we haven't done that at work yet, because IE7 is our like main browser at the moment, so we are sort of sticking with 7, but 6 we absolutely hate with a passion.
Right. Welcome to my world.
So let's move on. Another bit of Google story, which
I guess there's two or three kind of Google stories that we could probably rattle through quite quickly. Google SideWiki, which is an add-on for their toolbar, and basically allows for comments against any website you're looking at.
Oh.
So as you're, you know, you could be looking at the Digital Outbox website, you could be looking at BBC News, you could be looking at a particular news story on BBC News, and using SideWiki, people can comment on that story, which has been tried before. There's been lots of plugins over the years that have tried to do something similar. You know, add a universal commenting system on top of the web, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Whether this takes off, I don't know. And it's got the backing of Google, obviously, you know, and just the PR they can generate and the market.
The fact that a lot of people have a Google account that they're already automatically logged into when they visit their browser, maybe.
Yeah, the fact that they've got a toolbar there.
So I'm assuming they're going to have like somebody administrating this, managing
well,
it.
What they've talked about, because one of the big problems has always been commenting spam. You know, so whether it's been in our personal blogs, I'm sure we've had, you know, hundreds of thousands over the years, and certainly in Digital Outbox it's been picking up quite a few recently, but we have got a couple of plugins that are taking care of it all. And one of the issues would be, is this just another area for spammers and advertisers to put in, you know, crap?
Yeah.
And what they're talking about is, because they'll have the same spam engine that Gmail's got, they're confident that they'll be able to weed out spam comments.
I mean, but what I guess there's an element of if I owned a shop and I had a particularly nasty customer come along and make some pretty nasty allegations, yeah. Is there a way that I can fight those allegations?
No, and I think this is the problem. It's owning your content, isn't it? You know, so if we were in Digital Outbox right now, and if somebody put up a particularly abusive comment, we could remove it. Chances are I would just let it stay and respond to the comment and kind of, you know, do it that way.
I'd enjoy any comments. We want more.
That sounded so desperate.
I am.
Oh, right, please, comments for Chris. He's obviously feeling lonely.
Yeah, messages, anything, you know. Be nice.
I think part of the problem is it's just owning your own content. You know, you've put up your own website. Yes, you've allowed people to comment, but you can moderate the comments. Whereas with this, you can't moderate. And it's also bringing, and I guess one other thing I was thinking is bringing together one conversation. I don't want to see if we've put up a podcast and we've had people commenting, I don't want to be seeing the comments on our website and at the same time two or three people commenting on a side wiki. And how do you keep the conversation flow?
Tracked, yeah. And the other thing is, have you ever read a comment on a website anywhere that's been well balanced, thought out, you know, anything other than pretty rash and frightening?
Well, the people that
YouTube.
The people that have posted in our site are all rational and fair. But if you look at YouTube, it's just all flame wars and nonsense.
It's just absolute rubbish. I mean, so why would you want that against every single website? It adds no value. As nice as it sounds, it might be.
But it depends on the website. I mean, you can go to Guardian, you can go to BBC, and the quality of comments seem to be slightly
better.
But
they're all fully moderated.
Exactly.
Well, and we're saying that this isn't going to be moderated. That's the whole thing, isn't it?
Well, time will tell. I can't see it taking off. I wouldn't use it. Don't know if you guys would.
Well, I'm just thinking if there was a particular shop or a shop online you hadn't visited before, maybe you'd want to read some comments, but say you're not going to get a balanced view of what that shop's offering.
No.
And the service and stuff, because you're only ever going to hear about bad things, I guess.
I mean, again, I think this will be more beneficial to a retail outlet. Yes, there's a danger that some pissed off customer could leave some nasty remarks, but then on the flip side, you might get lots of positive comments and they'll generate more interest.
But the thing is, there's no control. Whether the retail, you know, outlet wants it or not, it's going to be there.
It's just a gamble you take then, isn't it?
Well, it's not even.
I'm not bothered about true. You know, but if bad comments warranted, then that's fine. It's just how do you deal with a situation where it's not warranted but it's still there?
Anyway, you're not going to be able to deal with it.
No, exactly. So we'll see.
So just deal with it. So let's move on to another Google article, Ian.
Push Gmail. Push Gmail came out this week. So I think a lot of people have been asking this for years. You know, once they'd added on IMAP, the next thing was to get Push Gmail. So thanks to Google Sync, it now supports Gmail. And on the iPhone, if you set up an Exchange account, you can now get Push Calendar contacts and Gmail from Google. The only downside is it only works for one account. So if you've got multiple Gmail accounts, you're going to have to choose one.
Have you tried it yet?
No.
I tried it.
And how was it?
I couldn't get into it. It kept saying your username and password isn't correct. I just gave up after a couple of hours.
I mean, I know on the first day they said that their servers were overloaded.
Maybe that's what it was.
You know, so I saw some reports of people had set it up in their inbox that went to zero. And it was only the next day that it was actually working properly and actually, you know, pinging through.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely interested in it, so...
I've set up both my Gmail accounts as IMAP on my iPhone, and that gives me all I need, really. You know, it's fully synced. Okay, I don't get a notification the second I get an email, but, you know, if I need to be checking, I can check.
And I'm the same, and I turned off, I mean, MobileMe's got Push, and I turned off Push just because of battery life.
And
it makes such a big difference.
Have we got any reports on what does this affect battery life?
I assume it would.
Yeah.
If you enable Push, it affects your battery life. And if
I've enabled Push.
Yeah, I've not. And I guess I don't get emails that I need to get. You know, I think I've got it set up to check every half hour or hour. I don't get emails that are like that critical that I need to respond straight away.
I'm still looking forward to something that will replace MobileMe for me, because at the moment I'm just not liking it at all. And I was hoping, you know, Google will eventually come up with something that will allow me to replace it all. I think it's getting there. I mean... I'm not I don't really care about push emails, but having something where I can sync my calendar and my contacts without losing any of the details.
Yeah, but Google should be able to do that now, because I've got my calendar synced up with Google.
Yeah, but I think there are some fields in my address book that Google doesn't support.
Yeah, so there's a couple, like photos and stuff like that, it doesn't support. But I mean, I've just taken a view. I'd rather do without photos and save £50 a year. Because my mobile me is now finished.
All right.
I am no longer a mobile me subscriber. Wahey!
Steve won't be happy about that.
Oh, sorry, Steve. Yeah, but I own the word Apple. Get a grip.
Right.
So, final little bit of Google news. I don't know if any of you guys use it. Picasa?
Not used it for a long time.
Yeah, have done in the past. Not for a while.
Yeah, 3.5 came out this week. And it now has face recognition. So if you've used face recognition on, I guess, iPhoto does it, Facebook does it, then it's similar to that. So you can now search through all your photos by name, upload an album by name. And it's also got better geotagging and uploading sharing options. And I guess the nice thing is it's free. So for a free bit of software, it's actually very, very good.
Very good.
I don't think I've got particular use for it, but if I took hundreds of photos, I'm sure it'd be good. I've heard that it takes a long time to do that process of finding faces.
Yeah, and it's the same in iPhone.
Okay. One last article before we move on to our favourite subject. We'll be talking about Bing, and Chris can give us a bit of news.
Yep. So Bing has seen a very, very slight increase in their browser share from 8.9%. to 9.3%. So it's only tiny, but the fact is that we all commented, and I think everyone commented when Bing was released, saying there's no way they can make any dents into Google. But the move does show that Bing is now the search engine of choice for some people.
Well, I think
we'll see where it goes.
The thing that's been surprising is that people have tried it and it's actually been sticky. You know, they've actually thought this is as good or if not better.
Yeah, I like this more. And whether some of that is, you know, organizations changing their default search, who knows? But anyway, it's definitely moving.
I'll be honest, I use it now instead of Google for image search. I get far better results out of it.
So again, bit of competition. Seems to be lots of features happening now.
Indeed.
Okay, so now we come to Apple. And previously we covered an article about battery life and
previously
how
the
iPhone battery life after the 3.1 upgrade, and since then there's been a new article that's come out which Ian can tell us all about.
Yeah, it was about an hour after we finished the podcast last week. There's now users can now log battery issues with Apple, and there's also a battery life logging tool which allows you to log your basically your battery performance, and it creates seemingly quite a big file, but then report those back to Apple. So there's an acknowledgement that there are issues. Now, whether the issues have come from the 3.0 or 3.1 updates, not quite sure. Then if you go in the forums, there's an awful lot of hate out there just now for you know, just the issues that people have had from 3.1 or 3.
Yeah.
If you go in, there's people talk about like some sort of coma mode, you know, it's just their phones just, you know, it doesn't make calls successfully, it doesn't receive them successfully. You're going hello, hello all the time and, you know, calls dropping. I don't have that issue.
Yeah, but I mean, remember I said to you last week, I think that I keep getting these random shutdowns.
Yeah.
I've had another three this week, so there's definitely an issue in there somewhere.
No, I'm totally, and it as we said last week, it just reminds me of when I first got my iPhone. Yours was perfect and mine was rubbish. You know, for that first sort of two, three months, you know, I just had like four or five times where it totally crapped out on me and I had to rebuild it.
Yeah, when you think of that, you think there isn't like a specific pattern, so it's not like you can say it's the hardware or it's just the software. It's like, I mean, mine was fine and yours was a bit buggy, but we still had the same hardware.
Yeah,
and we had the same operating system as well. So
yeah. I know
you don't really know what the issue is here.
I would just do yours again. I would reformat and
what
just
reformat.
Well, you can do it when I see that. I mean, I'd like do a restore from backup, you know, so it shouldn't take like, you know, days and days.
No. Yeah, I might give it a go if I start getting more pissed off with it.
I think my restore from backup, it took about a couple of hours maybe.
Yeah. Mm. And it was the longest 2 hours of my life because you kept tweeting about it as well.
Because I was annoyed.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
It's just, he's a morning little bugger when something's not working.
anyway.
Right,
sorry, Chris.
The next article is quite funny. It's about the ongoing battle with Pampry and syncing with iTunes. So something happened this week, which was, Ian, do you want to tell us about that, please?
Basically, the Palm had... When Apple had blocked them previously and then Palm updated their webOS operating system to then let them back in, they sent off a letter. I think this was before, was this before you joined us, Chris, that we were discussing this one? And Palm and the letter were basically trying to say that Apple were wrong in blocking them, which we at the time thought was barmy. The fact that Palm were trying to kid on or a different vendor sounded more, you know, more of an issue than anything that Apple was doing. And basically, Palms had their issues dismissed, and also the letter sent back to them officially this week from the USB forum was that, I've got it here. I attached you with information, blah, blah, adopted and published policy regarding vendor identification numbers. Under the policy, Palm may only use the single vendor ID issued to Palm for Palm's usage. Users of any other company's vendor ID is specifically precluded. Palm's expressed intent to use Apple's VID appears to violate the attached policy. Please clarify Palm's intent and respond to this potential violation within 7 days.
This sounds like the kid who goes, you know, miss. Apple won't let me sync with them, and the teacher's gone, actually, that's entirely within Apple's right.
But it was absolutely crazy. You know, it's like I'm going to kid on a different vendor. Which sounded like the wrong thing to be doing, and then complain about somebody else.
Can you summarise the USB IF's response in 2 words, Ian?
Get out! Now, what is interesting is that there's rumours, I think it was yesterday, the day before, that there's a new update to webOS coming, and they reckon they've managed to get around it again, and it will now work with iTunes.
Interesting.
And it'll be interesting whether it's through the vendor idea or another way.
Just let them sink.
Get out.
Get out,
you skank.
For the good of future times when Apple haven't got the best product out there and we all want to still sync with our iTunes library, let them in.
Did you just admit that Apple has the best product?
I've said it all along. At the moment, it's not an issue because Apple have got the best product. The best phone out there, even if it doesn't last a full day.
Yeah, but it's not the phone we're talking about, it's iTunes.
But syncing my phone with iTunes is what I want to do. My portable music player, that's my choice at the moment.
All right.
But the day that it becomes that I want to use a different one for whatever reason, whether it's the latest Apple products, shock horror, isn't the best out there. That's when we need this syncing to be working.
It's Apple's content, you know, so why should they let someone else use it, you know, especially a competitor? You know what I mean? It's like me going to the market and setting up a stall.
I don't know why you're so in support of this, as in saying get out, when it's going to affect you badly if you know, when you do want to use a different...
Pillow. I'm in support of it because it winds you up. I understand what you're saying. I think it's... you know, maybe if Palm agreed to pay them, you know, some share of their profits, maybe, yeah, it'd be fine. But I can see Apple's point of view. I mean, why should you sell one of your or let someone use one of your key features, especially one of your competitors?
And there's always two sides of the story, aren't there? But I'm just thinking from a consumer's point of view.
From a consumer's point of view, it would be good to have choice. But at the same time, when Apple are trying to sell the products, and here's our music store, which is exclusive if you buy this product, and then a Palm comes on sale with a pre. We're far better than the iPhone. Yeah. We're their major competitor, and blah blah blah. And then at the same time, and by the way, we do sync with iTunes as well. Have that.
But see, the other thing is, if it's consumer choice, and if I want to buy a phone specifically to use with iTunes, I'll see what works with iTunes. Okay, iPod Touch, iPhone works with iTunes. I'll buy that. Why should I go and buy Palm Pre and then demand that iTunes doesn't work with it, and I want iTunes? You know what I mean? Surely that is consumer choice.
I know what you mean, but to be fair with Chris, I mean, I know what I'm like. See if the Zune HD came out as a phone and it looked amazing.
Yeah.
But I didn't quite like the music software.
Yeah.
I know I'd want Zune HD to sync.
Yeah, but because what you want,
I want the best hardware at the same time.
What you want and what you can have is different as an IE.
Yes.
So, anyway, we can argue about this all day long. Let's move on. There's a new iTunes update this week, Ian.
Yeah, which seems to have fixed my crashing issues. I don't know about. I don't think you guys had any issues. I had a couple,
but been fine.
I found it a bit clunky again, but then it was like that before. Hmm. But I mean, you were saying last week, Ian, that you were really looking forward to 9.8.1.
Yes.
And you got it. They listened.
Thanks, Steve. Bill, it was becoming really quite painful. You know, I expected it to work and it wasn't. So there seemed to be its performance issues and bugs and issues where iTunes may unexpectedly quit and things about sorting and syncing podcasts. But for me, it's been solid. I think that's been 3 days now without a crash, and I was getting one probably every day, every time I went to the store. Certainly it crashed, and I went to the store quite a few times. It's been solid. Happy days.
Good stuff.
Did you buy that Jay-Z album, the LP?
Yeah. Why?
Bit of a rapper then, are you?
No.
No, I just remember reading your tweet about it, and I thought, oh, he must have bought Jay-Z.
I know it's amazing that I have bought, like, Jay-Z, but I have, and it's very, very good. Highly recommended. Okay. All good music stores.
Okay. And the last Apple topic we have today is the TomTom iPhone car kit. I think recently it went on sale on the Apple Store for £99, and I think mistakenly they had put up saying that it includes the software.
Yes.
But then it was quite quickly removed. And for £99, you only get the hardware, you don't get the software at all.
Yeah.
So
That's £99 for the hardware, and then it's about the same again, is it, for the software?
It's 60 quid, is it?
60 for UK and 80 for UK and Europe.
Europe.
Okay, yeah. So for the whole proposition, you're talking about 160 quid.
Mm.
Which, that's for, you know, it doesn't seem too bad, although it does seem a lot.
I think that the fact that you guys bought that Copilot for, what, £25, was it?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Which is the biggest bargain.
Yeah, and you think, why should I spend more then?
Yeah, because it helped me out this week. The only thing I did notice last week is it really struggled. It struggled around bits of Glasgow. Mm. And it was really struggling with, and if you don't come from here, you don't know, but some of the motorway sections where you've actually got lots of roads underneath, it got really confused whether I was on the motorway or whether I was actually on the roads underneath the motorway.
Okay, so say you've got Copilot, right? Say if you bought this TomTom hardware kit, would you then get a boost in the GPS signal, and would it work with Copilot?
Allegedly. So I've not...
I haven't had confirmation, but that's what I understood. Yeah, it boosts the actual hardware rather than the software.
So what TomTom had said was the hardware isn't just specific to using the TomTom software, and it would assist any software that uses GPS.
Yeah. I mean, I must say that the hardware looks quite nice and sleek. So.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Which reminds me, actually, did you buy that other one that you were on about?
Oh, yeah. What was it called?
The Brodit.
Oh, yeah, Brodit. And it's superb.
Is it?
Yeah. So it's like just clips in. And thanks to Brian for finding that for me. It's, you know, I think I only paid 40 quid. And it's been fantastic for me. Mm. So if I'm going anywhere I'm not familiar, I had a hill climb last week, wasn't sure where we were going, slaps in, GPS is working, music's playing in the background as well through iTunes.
And that charges your iPhone at the same time?
You can get it with a charger because I already had a charging cable that does the radio.
Right.
I didn't need to buy the actual, you know, so it does a pass through, so it still charges and it still plays the music into my radio, so it's been ideal.
So basically, for less than the price of the TomTom hardware kit, you can get Copilot and Brodit and a charger.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Mm. No, and Copilot software is really good. And I don't know if it's just a backlash or because TomTom sold more, but if you look at the ratings in the App Store, which are, you know, again, I don't really trust them, but Copilot's sitting at a 4 and TomTom's at a 3. Way.
Okay, well, that wraps up Apple for the day.
Well, just one more thing. that more rumors. Just you had a story last week about new iMacs, mm-hmm. and it seems to be getting picked up a lot more just at the tail end of this week. That they're in manufacture, out in October, a bit sleeker, a bit thinner, and the good old Blu-ray rumors picked up again. So whether that's true or not, I guess maybe one will have a couple of weeks to find out.
Was it also something to do with the screen as well? Was it like, I thought I heard somewhere like they've improved the screen, but I can't be sure now what it was I read.
No, I've not picked up on that one. It was the iMac, and also they were talking about the MacBook.
MacBooks, yeah.
I can't believe they wouldn't put a Blu-ray in there. You know, it's now the formats that's been chosen by the market, and why not, basically?
Especially
they've always been big on having a multi-drive, haven't they?
Apple's part of the Blu-ray consortium, and they have been since very early
I'd
days.
I'd be far more surprised if it wasn't there, basically.
Mm. I mean, I think we might have discussed this before, and one of our conclusions was that is it because they want iTunes to take off? So, like, it's no movie downloads rather than Blu-rays. You just don't know.
I think if they put it in, it'll be put in as an option.
Mm.
Because how many people are doing Blu-ray recording right now?
Yeah, I think, and that's the fair enough choice, isn't it? But, I mean, whether that upsets their range as far as you're getting options there, whereas at the moment it's just you pick the one you want, don't you? Basically,
yeah.
Well, I mean,
the one and then pick options, are there? Okay.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you can usually change graphic card, RAM, hard drive, and you used to be able to change to the super drive as well.
Yeah, I mean, my view on the Blu-ray drive and a Mac is, if you were buying Blu-ray, you'd obviously have a kick-ass home entertainment system, or at least quite a big screen. And so would you want to watch a Blu-ray on a 24-inch screen or a 17-inch screen? So
true.
So anyway, moving on to gadgets and games. Chris can tell us about our tiny Blu-ray PC.
Well, I picked up on this because, we're talking last week about the Mac Mini taking on that role,
yeah,
potentially going forward, where put a Blu-ray in there and it sits under your TV. Well, ViewSonic have released a box that looks very similar to a Mac Mini, doing exactly that. So they've got an option with and without Blu-ray, so about £650 with the Blu-ray drive, £450 without. So again, exactly that kind of area. And then obviously they've got Media Center. It comes with a Media Center remote, so it's designed to sit under your TV. So that's pretty much where we're saying the Mac Mini wants to head.
Mm. Okay.
And hopefully, if they do it soon, they won't miss out on the market.
Next gadget, that sounds quite exciting, is a Microsoft secret tablet, Ian.
It's called a Courier, and I just don't know how genuine it is. It looks amazing. It was basically a folding booklet type idea. 2 7-inch screens, both are touch and stylus driven. It's got a camera, access to the web, got some local storage, and there's a little 2-minute kind of, I guess it's more of a salesy type video of what you can do with it, but just a very interesting concept, and it just seems tablets are starting to take off again.
Yeah.
You know what, the biggest thing for me about this story was, this is a supposed Microsoft response to a supposed Apple rumor that there may be a tablet coming at some point next year. So it's companies having to respond to this, the rumor mill.
But also the interesting thing is that they talked about Gizmodo seemed to have exclusive first details of it, and then it turned out it was one of the late prototypes amongst many prototypes of the hardware they're looking at, and it's been it's been headed up by the same guy that originally launched the Xbox. So there seems to be a lot of genuine, this is where we're going with this product. But as you say, it seems to be, a totally rumour-driven market at the moment.
And say, no one has yet given me a good reason why you'd want a tablet over a netbook or whatever.
Mm.
Hmm.
Are people going to force, well, I don't know, this Wednesday, basically. I don't know.
I can just see, advert promoting all these sort of tablet and booklet type notebooks in the future, and I can just see young sort of teenagers or people in their early 20s sitting around laughing, drinking coffee with their little tablets sitting in front of them. That's what I see.
This is the world you want, is it?
No, the only way I can see that they can sell it, because like you say, I personally can't see any way that I would use it or how I would use it, and I still prefer a traditional laptop.
Well, back in XP times, I'm sure it was Bill Gates talked up the tablet, mm-hmm. and they had tablet devices. You know, yeah. and we've had kind of touchscreeny, toughbook type devices at work, and they're okay. But most of the time, you swivel back the keyboard when you want to type.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
people aren't using it as they're not going to type with it. And as you're saying, I can once they get it down so it's thin enough, and I know that's a lot of the attempts at this kind of, you know, the screen paper type things, you know, where you can roll it up and you know, turn it into a really small size. You know, people have talked about this for years, but we don't seem to be any closer to it, especially because battery life doesn't last that long. You know, if you can get a battery in this thing that lasts a proper, you know, a full day's work, then I think you're starting to get closer to the, you know, a device that works.
For the majority of tasks that I do, a keyboard is still pretty important for my productivity.
Yeah.
Before we move on, I just remembered another Microsoft story I read this week. I don't know if you guys saw it, the pink phone that Microsoft were apparently developing.
No, I didn't see it.
No, didn't see that.
No, it was on one, I think it was either on Engadget or Gizmodo website. There's like screenshots of the pink phone that Microsoft have developed. And I think it's in partnership with, it's either Sharp or Samsung.
Right.
And the way they say they're going to sell it is Microsoft will sell their own models, which Sharp will produce, but will have the Microsoft stamp on it. And then Sharp will sell their own models with a Sharp stamp on it.
Yeah, and because Microsoft said they weren't going to build phones, didn't they?
Yeah.
So yeah. Not getting to that. I'm sure it was just a couple of days ago I came across this. And I think it's going to have some sort of modified version of mobile, Windows Mobile 7. But what I'll do is, after the podcast, I'll dig up some more information and we'll stick it in the show notes.
Yeah, I know Microsoft was saying that with their Windows 7, so that's Mobile 7, so that's the next one that's going to come out next year, I think. They were definitely going to work with manufacturers a lot more hand-in-hand to give that full-on interactive, integrated experience. Whereas the 6.5 on Windows Mobile that they're releasing now is obviously just another operating system, basically.
I mean, the pictures that I saw were like, there were two specific models. There was one that was, I think it was like a BlackBerry, so it had the hard keyboard. But it was like a fold-up type. Remember those old Nokias that came out? They were like long, and they were like, you folded them up and then you opened them and you had like a keyboard. Mm, so there was one like that, and there was another one which is like the traditional candy bar type. They don't look too good though. I mean, I thought they looked quite ugly.
Be interesting to see if anything comes of this next week. I imagine this is a slow burner. We'll see some more sort of maybe in a few months rather than
definitely, yeah. Okay, so moving on. Palm Pre will finally get a UK launch.
Yep, so 02, 16th October. A lot of different deals, but if you take, I guess, the equivalent iPhone one that most people own, £35 a month, free limited internet and Wi-Fi, and it's £97 for the handset. And the Touchstone, which allows you to, you know, it replaces the back of the Pre and allows you to do the wireless charging, is £44.11. So I don't know what you guys thought of the price.
I think the price is quite good, actually.
Yeah, bear in mind, it's only 8 meg.
Mm. But I think if I was like one of these maybe
that's 8
guys...
Meg. 8 gig.
If I was somebody who wanted to buy an iPhone and I thought it was a bit steep, but I wanted something maybe equivalent, just as good, I'd be quite tempted with that sort of price.
Yeah.
It's funny, we hear so much about the Palm Pre every week when we're, you know, reading through stories and listening out. I've forgotten that it hadn't actually been released here, basically. It's funny. I was quite surprised to see the story.
I find it a bit cheeky about that Touchstone thing, though. do you really need something, you know, like that? Why can't they give you like a simple dock just to stick it in and include it in the package?
It doesn't seem a whole lot more effort to sort of just stand it in something rather than just rest it on something, does it?
Yeah.
Really? When it comes down to it.
It's the future, man. Get a grip.
we'll see, won't we?
It'd be interesting to see, you know, like any time something is released, you get photos of people queuing outside, and then it'll be interesting to see how much interest this generates.
I don't think there'll be that much.
Chris will be there.
Will I? Okay.
And the only reason I'm saying that is Apple's got such a big brand just from iPod.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, moving on. Oh, this stuff. I'm getting excited now.
stutter.
The Sony motion controller, which we talked about a few episodes back, and at that point we weren't sure when it would be released. We thought it'd be like a couple of years yet. And there was Sony did a conference recently. Was it a Tokyo Game Show, Ian?
Yeah, it was, yeah. So that, and I guess, I mean, I don't know what you guys thought of the Tokyo Game Show. It just was basically the Sony show, because nobody else really did anything. But yeah, they're talking about a Japan release, and all they're saying is a spring 2010 for the rest of the world. They're hoping to sell 45 million units worldwide, and it'll also, it won't just be new games that will use it, but old games will be adapted to support it as well.
I remember reading then they said there's going to be a modified version of Resident Evil 5, which should be quite interesting. I couldn't find it before we started the podcast, but I remember there was a list of some of the games that they've developed for this. Nintendo Wii type games.
Yeah.
And some of them looked quite interesting. But the fact that it's like, it's not like vaporware, it's going to be released, you know, it's quite an exciting prospect. I saw a picture of it, but I don't know if it's the final version or not, but it's like, it's black.
Black with a big ping pong ball in the end.
Yeah. I'm not sure about the ping pong ball, but I can see how it would be beneficial, because obviously it lights up in different LED colours, so you can identify which player you are on screen. And I think it also helps the camera to pick it up as well, especially in a sort of dimmed environment.
I'm still a bit cynical. The old dog in me is like, oh, I can't be arsed.
But yeah, I think until you see it like in proper action and like you know, instead of like a tech demo, if you see it properly, then it'd be good.
And I guess to be fair, at the same time, Microsoft had quite a few Natal videos out this week. From, I think there was 7 or 8 notable Japanese developers saying, here's the games we're going to adapt and we've got the kit and it's amazing and we can't wait to incorporate it in our games. So it'll be interesting. I think Sony have definitely got a market lead over Natal, but I think Natal is a step on from what the motion controller is.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting.
I think in terms of usage, how practical it'll be, I still think that the Sony one has better chances of succeeding.
Yeah.
I think you had some dates for the 250 gig PS3 package.
It's out this week in the UK. So 250 gig PS3 Slim, October 1st, and it's for £285 with some bundles on the way as well. So I think Uncharted 2 and a couple of the big games over Christmas are going to get bundles.
And I think there's also like a movie bundle as well, so you get a couple of Blu-ray films.
Yeah. I guess the only thing that was a bit disappointing is the Slim's only just out.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a bit of a shame for people that have maybe invested in the Slim and now there's a better one, you know, just a month later. So
PS3 are definitely stepping it up though, aren't they?
Yeah, I think so.
They're pushing it now, whereas before it did felt always a bit like they were still waiting for all the games so they could push it.
Well, I think the last couple of shows have been the ones that have actually stepped up.
Well, there's only so many mistakes they can make. I was just going to say that I think I always felt that maybe the PS3 was released a bit too early.
I don't know.
They had to, though, didn't they? Because Microsoft had been out for so long with the Xbox.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think hardware-wise it was too early, but I think the software wasn't ready.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, in terms of like developer support and having the titles there to start with, and even getting some of the developers on your side. I think
now that they've realised that the cycle of these consoles is going to be a lot longer due to circumstance, and also it seems like Microsoft, have conceded that as well. So they're both, really shoving it to shoving out there now. PS3 have realised that there's a big market of people who've already got an Xbox who will be looking for that next and different thing.
Yeah.
Won't have new hardware, and therefore, let's get a PS3 in. I mean, that's certainly crossed my mind.
I still think it's going to be really difficult for them to get hardcore Xbox users to switch over. It's not because of the titles. I think it's more to do with the friends, your friends are on the Xbox.
That is an issue. But we'll come on to that maybe in a couple of articles' time, because there's a little story I want to tell.
Okay. There was another PS3 story this week, the latest firmware.
Yeah, this is from Tam, actually, sent us this on, so thanks you, again, Tam. Seemingly, people have had issues since 3 and 3.01. Now, a lot of people complained about 3 because they picked up the Slim and they couldn't play the old Uncharted game, and 3.01 fixed that for people, and it took a couple of weeks and they got a lot of flack. But there's actually quite a lot of forum reports that people can't play Blu-rays either. Which I must admit, it's not been an issue for me.
Nah, me neither.
So, but it is affecting people out there, so you know, should be okay. Aware.
So I guess there'll be a new patch out pretty soon to fix that.
I would have thought so.
Yep. Another PS3 story. We talked about the God of War 1 and 2 bundle last week. Apparently the God of War 3 demo that they showed at E3 this year will be bundled in the package.
Very nice.
Which should be quite nice. And going back to the Tokyo Game Show, there were some rumours that came out of that. One of them was that some of the PS2 titles, or maybe all of them, I don't know, eventually will be coming out on the PlayStation Network. And I think, does that mean they will maybe release a PS2 emulator as well? For the newer consoles, which don't have it.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, if that happened...
Certainly they moved from about hardware emulation to software, didn't they? That was one of the changes within, I think it was the first 6 months or 8 months of the PS2 release.
I think if they did do that, that'd be quite nice, because there's some old games I wouldn't mind playing again, like Ico, for example. You know, that was a great game.
I think it's nice, but there's probably people that have got libraries right now that would rather just play them.
That's right, yeah.
You know, rather than having to rebuy the content.
Yep. Another article on that same report was there will be a special Japanese import section. And that will be for some of these titles that are only released in Japan. Like Yakuza 3, for example. I mean, first I was thinking, why don't they just release the games here? But then I assume it's to do with, like, you know, cost. Printing discs. And the only thing I was thinking was, if it's Japanese import, then that means they probably won't have to do any translation for some of these Japanese heavy titles. So anyway, you know, we'll find out if it does happen or not. But the last bit of rumour, which is quite interesting, is they say there's a possibility of Dreamcast titles appearing on the PlayStation Network as well.
Which, when I read that, I was just like, Rolling Stone!
Daytona!
There's so many... Yeah. We talked about Dreamcast being 10 last week, and there's so many games that we didn't mention. It was a great console, and if there was a chance of being able to play some of them again, I think that would be superb.
I mean, I really hope that this turns out to be true, and the fact that I think it was leaked on one of Sega's websites, but you can't really tell whether somebody actually, you know, hacked and then uploaded this document, or whether it got there by accident from a Sega employee, just don't know. But fingers crossed. And lastly, we have a couple more PS3 stories.
Yeah, so I got I don't know if you got a beta invite through the week. I got a beta code for MAG.
No.
Now, MAG is a PS3 exclusive. It's a first-person shooter. But the big difference with this, it supports up to 256 players. So you can get, you know, 128 versus 128 battles, and the maps are very large to support that.
That is huge.
It is huge, and what they've done is, it's actually quite an ambitious game, because what they're talking about is having like a commander actually talking to group leaders, and the group leaders, you know, controlling little cells amongst these 128 people. And the concept sounded amazing, but I didn't think it would pull it off. So I was away with work, got the beta code through, so I started. Now, the beta lasts until October 9th, so it's only actually running for a couple of weeks. It runs Monday to Friday, and it only runs for limited times during the day. So I think it's like 5 to 8 and 10 to midnight or something like that, Monday to Friday. So there's not a lot of opportunity to play. So I downloaded the demo, which was a fairly small 256 meg download, and then started it up, and it wanted to patch it straight away. So that's another 30 meg. And then I thought I was in. But as soon as that starts, it starts downloading, I think it's 2.6 gigs worth of data, and it does it peer-to-peer as well. So After about 3 hours, it had got to 60%. And after another couple of hours, it was still sitting at 60%. So I just switched it off and went and played Halo, which I'll come on to later. I started it again this morning, and instead of being at 60%, it said I had 31%. And it got up to 70%. And I could see it stuck. It wasn't moving at all. So I quit the game and restarted it. But it actually installed. So there seems to be some issues at how it's reporting. You know,
it lies.
It does lie. But the game's actually installed. I just need to wait till Monday to play it. But reading on a couple of forums today, and they're saying it's working superbly. Lag-free. It's bewildering at first. But after 3 or 4 games, and you start to get a head around it, and you start to understand the scale of it, they're saying it's wonderful.
I wonder how you sort of decide who's going to be like the commander and, I've no idea.
So communications is obviously key, and that's my little worry about all the different headsets you've got in PS3s. And
And
I guess you've touched on something there about friends lists in the 360. I mean, I've not got a massive friends list, but I've got a group of friends that I've known and played with for years now. And I don't have that in PS3, because a lot of them came over from the Xbox onto the 360. And also the PS3, it's not been as good for me for playing games on the internet.
I suppose it's a way of like maybe making new friends and then getting excitement level. No.
I don't want to make new friends.
You make new friends, and then when you start enjoying a game, you get your Xbox friends to say, this is actually quite good. Why don't you try it out? So
I guess what's interesting, it's a point Chris made earlier about people are just looking at consoles have been out for so long now, they're looking for something new. The library in the PS3 is starting to pick up, and over the last year, I guess about 6 or 7 people from the Xbox friend list have now appeared on the PS3. Cool. So there's actually, my friends list is now growing on the PS3, so much so that you could actually easily have it'd be quite easy to probably get 8 player games set up, and it's people you know, and you could have a bit of banter with them.
So it's the PS3 using the Xbox friends list by proxy.
Almost.
Get out.
So I'm eager to try this now. I can't wait till Monday night to give it a blast.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to what you think about it.
I mean, there's an actual, the instructions and stuff doesn't come with it at all. But there's a forum post where the developers have put up all the different options, and it looks amazing. Can't wait to play it. And this is the type of thing I'm talking about the guys that I regularly play with in the 360, we've been asking for years, get away from the peer-to-peer type gameplay and give us some server-based gaming options. Give us games that are 32 versus 32, give us ones with bigger maps and bigger scale, give us a racing game that supports 32 players, not just 8.
I think peer-to-peer has its advantages, but it'd be nice to have, the option of like certain games.
Exactly. I've never been able to understand, because Microsoft are really good at monetizing a lot of the Xbox Live platform. Obviously we're paying £40 a year, and people are now buying avatar stuff, and why they've never said, here's an option, and pay an extra pound or 2 a month to get it. I would definitely
yep, I would. Okay. I mean, I've raced online on PC a lot recently, and you can have races with 40 other players racing around you, and it's a totally different experience than going back to a console.
Exactly.
And struggling to fit 8 into a room.
Yep.
And
it's
having
not
people
the,
drop out. And
it's not a technology, it's a technology choice issue. The technology and the broadband infrastructure is there to support all that now.
Okay, finally we have a couple of articles for racing fans. Gran Turismo 5 should be out in March 2010 in Japan.
Right.
No, that's a launch date for Japan.
Yeah.
And they were pretty they're pretty solid with that.
I guess it's no date for UK and US.
No, which was disappointing. I'm hoping it's not going to be like 6 months of translating nonsense and it's just going to be like a week or two later.
Yeah, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And finally some Xbox news for the 3 demo. Was out recently.
So that came out this week. What was your thoughts, Chris?
I generally felt nice. I was a bit disappointed that we didn't have a few more options to maybe just do a bit of time trialing, or it's only a 2-lap race you get on one track that's not going to be to everyone's taste.
You can do time trials on it.
Can you? Okay, well then I haven't looked at the options enough, have I?
It's a bit sneakily hidden. If you go to the scoreboards before you start a race, so go to the scoreboards and you'll see there's an option to say start racing within the scoreboards, and it just puts you on the track and you can just race around on your own.
Well, I shall be doing that later then. Well, but no, it felt very nice. It felt very slick. The car models look great. The graphics look good. You can go inside the cars now, which is really nice to add that level of realism. And it felt good with the controller. They haven't got backtracked on their braking system, which I'm really peeved about. But it all felt a little bit less severe than it did in the second version.
And I agree with all those comments. Really, I thought it looked lovely, and as soon as I started playing it, I got a real feel for the car. And it's stuff, yeah. You know, when you look at back at, like, you know, was it Dirt 2 that just came out? And as soon as you played that demo, it just feels, you know, shallow compared to this.
I think, and the presentation of the demo itself is brilliant, and hopefully that's going to carry across into the game.
Exactly, it looked lovely.
And the only thing we haven't been able to try out at all is the online, and how is that going to work?
Is it going to be good?
Yeah, I just really hope it's good. I mean, I quite enjoy those games to start with anyway, you know, this is the whole getting to new tracks, collecting cars and that. But I know for a lot of people it's going to make or break on how good it is online.
Yeah,
and we don't know anything about that yet.
The thing that was the Forza 2 amazed me at was the artwork, and how some people, a couple of guys I know that love Forza 2 not for the racing but for the artwork and selling it on the store. And reading about Forza 3, the artwork's been improved, but also they're actually going to be encouraging people to get setups and sell their setups on the store as well. So I think it's going to be a real lively community over the next couple of years around Forza 3.
There sounds like there's potential for this to last maybe even longer than Forza 2, which lasted probably over a year,
yeah.
Which is quite unusual for a game, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think that's that then. That's the end of the podcast, and we shall now quickly cover the picks. I think we'll start with Ian.
Aha. Well, my pick's probably an obvious fanboy pick. There's a new game out this week, and I'm guessing once the background music kicks in, you'll recognise what the game is. So this was Halo 3 ODST, which came out this week. And I think I'm going to kill that music before I get annoyed. I guess this has
put you right off, hasn't it?
It really did put me off. I guess this game, I don't know, it was mixed for a lot of people because it's a full price game. Well, it's not full price, it's £30, wasn't it, rather than 40.
I think recommended retail was 40, but everywhere sold it for a lot less.
Yeah, so it's £30. You got the actual ODST part of the game was a brand new single player mission that should last between 4 and 8 hours. You can play 4-player co-op with it. Alongside that, you also got a firefight mode, which if you played Gears of War 2 and the Horde mode in there, it's like that. So it's just oncoming groups of bad guys that you need to fight. And then there was a second disc that had all the multiplayer maps already released for Halo 3, plus 3 new maps. So I think the big question for everybody's been, is it good value? And for me, that's got all the maps in Halo 3, I'm probably one of the ones that's not going to get the most out of this, because got to be honest, a single player, I'm not going to play through myself. But then last night, myself, Chris, Paul and Brian, four of us went through, I guess we played for about 3-4 hours, didn't we?
Yeah, it went on quite a while, actually, didn't it?
The firefight mode was excellent. Played that for the first hour, and then we did co-op in the actual mission part of the game. It was actually very good. I actually really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was good. My take on it is this is going to last maybe a couple more weeks, and then I think we'll be back to just playing Halo 3, whacking the second disc in with the 3 new maps. I didn't buy the maps that long ago, so there is a big part of me which thinks, I don't know if I've got full value out of this, but I'm still willing to spend that money because we've had a lot of fun on it already.
Yeah, I think once we've gone through the actual missions, we'll never go back. I mean, I certainly won't go back.
I'm not even sure Firefight's going to hold it.
I think it will for a while. The problem you've got is it's the start of the gaming period. You know, so you've got Halo, you've got ODST this week. There's FIFA 10 next week. I think not the week after. The week after that's Uncharted 2.
Well, that must be about Forza territory as well.
Yeah, a week after that's Forza. A couple of weeks after that's Modern Warfare 2. And you've got God of War pack in there. and there's probably Left 4 Dead 2 is kicking around in that, and within that 6-8 weeks, it's just jam-packed. And I think what will come out after Christmas is we'll still be probably playing Forza, Halo 3 multiplayer, Modern Warfare, and the rest will be picking up, you know, when we fancy it. But the, I guess one thing that I really liked was I didn't expect the graphics to improve that much, but I actually really liked the what they've done with it. So they've got a real, I think it was Paul said it last week, it was a real Tron feel at one point, just with the kind of neon lighting that they had. And I just loved it. It was great playing it last night. We'll be back on tonight. I'm sure there'll be quite a lot of usage out of it over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
So, not unsurprising, but highly recommended.
No, that sounds good.
Well, and I mean, one of the things that I really liked, and in the firefight mode, what you're doing is you're starting off four players against a whole batch of enemies coming in, and you've got a number of lives to get through. I think it's five waves you need to get through with seven lives split amongst your four players. And I think it was Brian at one point was the only guy left with four or five guys to go and kill, and everybody else watches him, and you're all talking to him, and he managed to get through, and he gets a little hero achievement, and it was just great even watching him when he was doing that.
You're a hero.
No, it was superb.
And then you did try and be a hero as well, didn't you, Shriek?
But I failed. I failed. So, but I think I can actually grab the video off of both of those from the 360 and we can throw it up. Because it's great to actually, when you were watching back, it was just hearing all the banter at the same time. I got a couple of sticks in and it was like, oh, this is going really well, and then I failed. So
it all went wrong.
It really annoys me, you know, that I can't play these type of games. I'm surprised that no one has actually come up with something, like maybe a device or a pill that you can eat. You know, that will stop people
a pill
from
that you can eat.
The blue pill or the red pill?
Or a pill that you can stick up your ass.
But yeah, you know, I'd love to play these games, but I get motion sickness. It's kind of annoying.
You get ill.
Well, when you look at the Call of Duty multiplayer, it just looks amazing. So good
anyway,
times.
Good pick.
Good times ahead.
I'll get my pick out of the way next. It's it's an app, and it's Mac only, unfortunately. And basically what it is if you guys have ever used, I think it's Text Expander, it's similar to that. What it allows you to do is make a collection of or snippets of any kind of text. It's primarily aimed at developers. So for example, if they're like snippets of code that you like to use over and over again, what you can do is you can copy that code and paste into Snippet and give it like a couple of tags to remind you what it is. And so next time you start working on a new project, you want to get back to that code, and instead of like opening up your old projects, hunting through your code, try to find where that bit of code was, you launch Snippet, which sits in your menu bar. So you launch I think it's with the Control S, and then you type in a couple of tags for whatever code you're looking for, and it pops up on screen, and you just sort of copy and paste it into your project. Simple as that.
So it sounds a bit like Evernote, but more sort of coding.
Yeah, it's. I think it's more sort of like immediate. So like like Evernote, I always kind of struggle to find stuff easily. This is to be honest with you, I've not really used it that much, but from what I have used, it's really, really easy to find where it is you're trying to get your hands on. And then even if you're like, if you write a new bit of code that you think, oh, I can see myself using that in the future, copy it, launch Snippet, and paste it in. You can give it a category of like HTML, jQuery, JavaScript, whatever you want. And that's it, you know. And the interesting thing is if you like launch Snippet and you type in a tag name, and there are like lots of snippets with that same tag, you get like a list. So in a way it reminds me of a little bit like Quicksilver and Spotlight. So you just scroll down the list, select your code, press enter, and it gets pasted in. So it's quite useful, and it's not just for code. I mean, like I said, you can paste any type of text in it, like I don't know, for example, can't. On the website, they've got a video demo, and they sort of like talk about, like, you know, your HT access file. So that there might be a bit of code in there that, or a bit of text that you maybe refer to quite a lot. So you can paste that and then access it. And the other good thing is you don't have to copy the whole snippet. You can actually just copy a part of the snippet and then paste it in. And it's $12.95, which isn't too much, to be honest with you. And if you see yourself writing a lot of code and copying and pasting old code in, I think it might be useful. So you can...
Do you know whether this is cloud-based or whether this is...
No, it's not. It's not cloud-based, no. It's, no.
There's a big opportunity here for someone to nip in then, because it needs to be cloud-based.
Mm.
Not to piss on your pick.
No, in what way though? I'm just trying to understand.
Because then I can develop on a number of different machines and still get access to it, and then it won't matter whether it's a Mac or not.
That's another thing I missed out. It does actually sync with MobileMe. So if you're, like I said, it's for Mac only. So if you have like multiple Macs, you can. I mean, yeah, it's not the same as what you were saying, but you do have a little bit of flexibility that you can get your snippets on another machine.
And I'm guessing if it's syncing via MobileMe, what you can usually do is sync via Dropbox as well.
Yep. Yeah, right, but okay. Unfortunately, because it's not Windows, then if you were like trying to work on like multiple machines using the same, say jQuery code, which is platform independent, then yeah, you might struggle that way. But if you're just developing on Macs, then yeah, it'd be quite useful.
Yep. Very nice. That actually looks lovely. Just in the website just now.
So there you go, that's my pick. And finally, we come to Chris. What have you got for us?
Well, I mean, I have plenty of picks lined up. But you know, I saw this one. And obviously, towards the end of October, we're gearing up for the Windows 7 launch. So what better thing to do than have a party? Yeah, so I don't know how to have a party, and I certainly don't know how to have a launch party. So Microsoft have helpfully released some great videos of how to have your own launch party. There'll be a link in the show notes, and you just have to see it. You know that geeky person at school where you always felt a bit sorry for?
Me.
But then
Jack was laughing because he knows that's me.
But then you kind of spoke to them, and you realised that they were a bit geekier and best to be avoided. Now Microsoft has got this great product coming out, and they go and ruin it. They actually do Apple's job for them by releasing these kind of videos, and oh dear God, it's just tragically bad.
Well, the thing is, I watched it, I'd read about it through the week, but I was away with work, so I didn't really catch up, and I didn't really watch it through the week. And I watched it this morning, and I was like, this is a spoof.
That's exactly what it looks like.
This is made
up. Looks like someone spoofed it. I can't believe it's real.
And if you watch the video, you've got the guy on the left who is like that geeky guy who doesn't quite know what he's on about. Then you've got probably the old Jewish mum.
You can't believe you said that.
You've got the woman who's a bit of a MILF, and then you've got a token black guy in at the end. And yeah, it's just like, who sits
we,
there?
We're missing the Asian, you know, element there.
Yeah,
so, I mean, they haven't done their job, really. Maybe
no,
in one
have,
of the secondary videos.
They're going for the Jewish vote. There's no way they're going to have an Asian and Jew in the same one, because the Jew would be like, oh no, he'll blow me up.
That party wouldn't be fun, would it?
Oh, it'd be class. It'd be absolute class. Dear. It would be all the might of America against, you know. Oh, I better stop. Anyway,
the video is awesome. You have to see it to believe it. If you haven't puked by the end, then you know, good on you. It's just unbelievable that they think this is actually anything that
it's not
needs
just
to
videos,
have a video.
They've actually got. You can go to their website and you get like tips on how to host.
I can't believe you visited. I couldn't bring myself to click on any link that was coming.
You get tips on how to host and a host planner, so you know what to do as a host.
See, when I first saw that, I thought, is this like a joke? I mean,
no,
it's a bloody software. Why would you have a party to celebrate software? It's like you're not getting any money out of it.
They were talking about crowding around the PC and look, everyone can have a look at some photos and let's get everyone with their cameras, you know, at the party, and then we can upload them and oh, that'd be fun. Woo!
Oh, it's really funny because when you see those actors acting it out, you know, the MILF and the black guy, and they're like sort of, you know, like dipping into the little party food and the knickknacks, and they're making it look so this is actually really, you know, we're sincere about this. We're going to have a great party, you know, and like.
And they're talking like
they're.
Yeah.
Who does that?
Maybe Americans do. Maybe Americans have seen that and thought, that's me.
No.
I think the next OS 10 launching, we should have a party, I think, to celebrate it. And maybe invite Steve Jobs.
It has to be a Mac party, though, wouldn't it? They have to be ultra cool.
Yeah.
We'd all have to wear black t-shirts.
Turtlenecks.
And sort of like dirty trainers. And sort of denims that look quite cheap.
And you can't have a party anyway because you're all queuing outside the Apple shop.
I can't deny it. I have queued outside an Apple shop.
Oh, yeah, I have as well, actually.
Well, you're worse. You queued outside an O2 shop.
That's what I meant. It was O2.
Yeah. I probably wasn't worse.
So if you're planning on having a party, then let us know. Let us know whether this video is of any use to you.
Maybe we should have one.
Maybe we should.
Maybe it should be the in fact, you should be the host, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
So you are the Windows fanboy amongst us.
As you keep telling me.
Well, we'll do a straw poll. Who's pre-ordered Windows 7? Shaquille?
Nope.
I've not. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, I have actually.
There you go.
I'll get the diary out then, shall I?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that invite. We'll put it up on Twitter and we'll get loads of people gatecrashing.
We're
going to
have
house.
So much fun.
We just need to find a Jewish mum from somewhere.
Okay. I need to stop myself.
Anyway, let's just stop there and stop picking on Chris. I believe we have a bit of an apology to make, Ian. Or
have we?
Yes, we have. We have an apology to make for the lack of picks update on our website from last week.
Ah, I forgot about that. Yeah. I mean, I'll hold my hands up. I've had a really busy week, so I've not had a chance to do anything about the fantastic Runkeeper. Or even, I think I've not even done Remember the Milk. So this week, I shall be getting my act together, because there's quite a lot I want to show off about both those services.
I managed to find a way of screencasting a piece of screencast software. Don't even know how you do that. I'm going to get into some Catch-22 horrible loop.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we will try to rectify that soon. I think that's that then. If you want to find out more about us, you can visit us on the website, digitaloutbox.com, or you can email us at info@digitaloutbox.com, and you can follow us on Twitter @digitaloutbox. And if you download our podcast on iTunes, can we please request that you leave a review for us? That'd be just great. Ian, if you want to find out more about you, where can we get you?
blogund.net, Twitter, Sweeper.
Okay, Chris?
Blog, chrishutchinson.org.uk, and Twitter is cheesyuk.
What about you, nice. Shaquille?
My much-neglected blog is at shaquillenaim.com, and on Twitter, you can find me under ShaqN.
I'm telling you, see, since Big Brother's finished, hear nothing from either of you. The only time you hear from Chris is when something's gone wrong.
Yep, that's what it's for, isn't it?
And I think we won't hear from you until Celebrity Big Brother next year.
I don't watch that rubbish.
Oh,
I put a couple of tweets up last night.
Did you?
Yeah. It was about Flash Forward and Fringe Season 2.
Ah, you downloading dog, that's right.
What? Anyway, let's call it a day here, chaps.
And just one final request. Give Chris a comment. Please.
Okay,
well, thank you for listening, and catch you all next time.
Ta-da.
See ya.
Bye.
It's not the long one this week.
Well, it's not even much better. It's not even the medium one. I thought I'd do the short one to balance it out. Balance.
Digital Outbox, we save you time.
You could have done the brum, 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 brum.
And I've not even said to Chris that Lewis Hamilton's out in the first qualifying session.
That's controversial, that is.
I will smite you.
I'm pulling out right now.